Good evening, and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. For the latest on the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, we now turn to Dr. Henry Nyman.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I want to do an update. We got a new sequence out of Australia. The sequence that kind of disappeared for a brief time from Singapore is back. And California went over 2 million cases. So I'll start with the numbers in the U.S., none of which are known to be the variant, although unfortunately screening in the U.S. is not what it used to be. And there is concern that the virus, the variants are already here. And have not been picked up because the sequencing levels are definitely not what they were in the past. And so there's not a whole lot of sequencing that's been done on the East Coast, which would be the likely landing spot for travelers from the UK or even other European countries or even Israel now. And the sequencing levels are relatively low. CDC's announced that they're going to start a screening program, so they're going to up their game somewhat. And New York has indicated they're going to increase their screening based upon what happened from the Italian strain, which came from Italy or at least somewhere in Europe, to New York last spring. And and in fact, this variant is the Italian strain, but it's significantly evolved. So I'll go over that. First, I'll just go through the numbers. Tonight, there's maybe a few more still coming from California, but as of right now, I've tallied 3,404 deaths, which would be the second highest last Wednesday. It was a little above 3,600. So it was 3,400 today. And yesterday it was one of the highest, probably the third or fourth highest, where there was 3,267. So 3,200 and 3,400 deaths on consecutive days this week. I'm not sure how tomorrow will be after that. The holidays will depress the reporting, and it might even depress the reporting for tomorrow. I'm not sure. But in addition to the 3,404 cases, there were, or deaths, I should say, there were 230,000 new cases reported today. And just to give an idea on the deaths, quite a few states are now reporting over 100 cases, 100 deaths per day. And number one today was California with 348 deaths, followed by Texas with 294 deaths, followed by Pennsylvania with 230. Both New York and New Jersey are set records today of recent deaths anyway. They had more deaths back in the spring, but their numbers had gotten down into single digits a month ago or so. And yesterday, New York reported 141 deaths, and today they reported 164 deaths. Yesterday, New Jersey reported 103 deaths, and today they reported 140 deaths. So they're both reporting over 100 consistently, or at least for the last couple of days. And New York actually has been above 100 for about a week now. And Massachusetts is catching up. They're up to 83 deaths. And then other ones above 100, in Illinois had 171, Florida had 121, Ohio had 109, Tennessee had 111, Missouri had 127, Alabama had 135. So you can see that the number of cases with 100 deaths is expanding, and these are going to be deaths that were from the Thanksgiving travel or meetings. These would be from the earlier increase in cases before the holiday travel, which is one of the reasons warnings were given not to travel on Thanksgiving. And that warning really was not heeded by many. And similarly, the same thing's happening for Christmas and New Year's. It's a lot of travel. And there will be another big wave in January on cases and deaths probably in February. And the deaths from the Thanksgiving travel will probably be mostly in January. So the fact that there were over 300, second highest number of deaths today, and probably the fourth or fifth highest yesterday, are just a sign of where this is going. The deaths will continue to increase this month, next month, or the month after. The deaths will not be impacted by the vaccine, because the time between getting infected and dying is and getting that death reported, there's a lag in reporting also, it's probably a couple of months. And so those that are going to be dying in February are already infected, and they're not going to be influenced to any major degree by the vaccinations. So far, I think 1 million have been vaccinated in the U.S. With the first shot. They still have to get the second shot, and the first shot would not take effect yet anyway. Even if there's a lower response for the first, it'll still take about 1 or really 2 weeks before you'll see the effects of that first shot. So there's really no impact on people getting infected right now, and the first impacts might be towards the end of this month. But the vaccine's not going to do much. These numbers are going to go up, and whether these numbers are being driven at all by the two variants that have been reported in the UK and South Africa is not at all clear, simply because the U.S. has done a fair number of sequences, but they haven't done that many recently, especially on the East Coast. And now they are picking up, but like New York is really concentrating on 6 hospitals. And, it's going to take a little while before there's going to be an appreciable number of hospitalized cases, because this just showed up in England towards the end of October. And so the numbers are high right now, but they aren't necessarily at a level where there would be somebody that they got infected, came to the U.S., infected other people, that start getting the numbers to go up, and then have a significant number of those other people go into a hospital where they were positive and the sample was collected, and then they ran the sequence and then they published the sequence. So, I mean, it's possible there are sequences that show the variant, but they haven't really finalized that and haven't deposited it yet. And that can happen relatively quickly, but it's really not clear. I mean, a sequence from Singapore was deposited yesterday, and then it was cold, and then a media report came out describing the 17-year-old girl, and which was who the sequence was from, and then the sequence actually is back again. And that sequence is a little bit unusual. So I'm going to go through why these sequences suggest that there's significant amount of recombination going on, and why the sequences suggest that the ability of the vaccine to effectively halt the spread of this virus may be impacted by these mutations. First of all, they do have a lot in common. I'm going to go over the variant that's in the UK, the variant that's in South Africa, and the variant that was identified in a patient in Boston who was given treatments that limited his immune response. He was somewhat immunosuppressed for the various treatments he was getting, and he was infected for a long period. I mean, his first infection was in April, and he actually died in September. And he had, I believe, the initial infection and four recurrences. So, and it was essentially the same virus that kept on evolving and mutating. And so I'll talk about that particular virus also, because there's a lot of data on that patient that they did collect samples at multiple time points. They collected a couple samples at the beginning and April and May, and they did a couple more in June, and then they did 1, 2, 3 in August, and then they did 2 in September. And all of these sequences have been deposited at DSAD, and all of the later sequences all had this receptor binding domain change that is present in both the UK variant as well as the South African variant. So to begin with, what they all have in common is, number one, they all have 3 deletions in the spike protein. And they're all kind of in the same place, but not exactly. The variant that's been found in the UK has 2 of the deletions at positions 69 and 70, and a 3rd deletion at position 145. And there is a paper out on the deletions at positions 69 and 70, and it suggests that that might be involved with immunological escape, indicating that that mutation causes the spike protein to be less reactive with antibodies that were made, especially against the wild type. It didn't have those 2 deletions. They had, needless to say, but just as a reminder, all of the vaccines that are currently in advanced clinical trials or have been approved for an emergency use authorization, received that, were all made against the original sequence out of Wuhan. They were made, they were approved first because they got an early start. The 2 that have already been approved are both used the messenger RNA that encodes the spike protein. So It's just the 1 protein is the target. This messenger RNA is encapsulated in liposomes, and that's what's in the vac vaccine. So the vaccine doesn't have any virus, doesn't have dead virus, doesn't have live virus, doesn't have any virus. It's got one of the genes of the virus in the form of messenger RNA, and then that is in this artificial cell. It's just a liposome. It's just a fat ball with RNA inside, and then it basically is injected, and then that RNA is recognized by the host, and it's used to make the message, to make the spike protein, and then the spike protein is recognized as being foreign by the immune system, and the host ends up making antibodies to the spike protein that can neutralize that and prevent virus from spreading or infecting, because the antibodies inhibit the ability of the virus to get into cells. And so that's how the vaccine works. Now, how the mutations work is they represent amino acids that aren't there. They're deleted. So they're missing three amino acids in the sequence. And they're all kind of at the amino end of the protein. So the one in the UK has deletions at position 69 and 70, as well as position 145. Now, the patient in Boston who is immunosuppressed and have all these sequences from him. He was 45 years old, and like I say, he had recurring infections between the samples are collected as early as April 28th and as late as September 9th. And there are 9 samples that were collected and sequenced. So all 9 of those sequences are at GeneBank. It started out with it was the Italian strain, essentially. It only had one mutation in the spike protein. Didn't have any deletions. It just had, you know, the very common mutation, D614G, that mutation essentially took over the world, and virtually every sequence out there now has that particular mutation in the spike gene. Some of them are called the G clade, and then when more mutations came out, it was called the GH clade and the GR clade, and they just started switching it to 1.1.17. You know, they started using numbers to do the strains because there were way too many mutations to keep adding letters that, you know, get unwieldy and not very memorable. So they all have the same mutation, D614G, which seems to increase its transmissibility. And so just that one change alone increases transmissibility, but now all the viruses have that. So they're all equally more transmissible than the original Wuhan strain, which is the original sequence. So the sequence did not have any of these mutations, including the widespread D614G. But in addition to that mutation, the virus in the UK has 3 deletions, one at 69, one at 70, and one at 145. Now, the case in Boston also has 3 deletions, and they're right between those. In fact, right next door to 145. They're 141, 142, and 143. And towards the end, the last sequence that was generated from this patient really expanded that to 144. So it really had 4 deletions, 141 to 144. And then the sequences from South Africa have their own set of three deletions, and those are at position 242, 243, and 244. So a little further downstream, but still in the amino portion of the spike protein. And the reason this is significant is it's possible that, I mean, when antibodies are made, most antibodies recognize the folded protein. So when you look at these sequences, it's all linear. You just see what amino acid follows which one. But in the actual protein, they get kind of folded up, and you can have one amino acid from one part of the sequence and another one from another part, and they kind of come together in close proximity. And they're recognized by antibodies. And so the residues that are identified by the antibodies are discontinuous. They're not all right in a row. They all occupy the same space in the folded molecule. And if you take the molecule and you remove three amino acids and then you fold it, it doesn't fold exactly the same way in most instances. And so there's the distinct possibility that having three deletions creates enough change in the shape of the spike protein that these contact points that are in one position in the wild type, the strain without any deletion, aren't exactly in the same place as they are in the deleted sequence. And therefore, having these deletions may knock out a bunch of different antibodies to a bunch of different positions, all of which are slightly altered because the shape of the molecule is altered because it's missing, the primary sequence is missing three amino acids. In the absence of those, kind of changes the primary sequence, which changes the secondary structure, which changes the tertiary structure, which is the structure the antibody recognizes. So you can knock out a lot of antibodies simultaneously if you change the shape of the molecule a little bit, and that those antibodies are directed against discontinuous determinants, which is what most antibodies are directed against. Most of them are to discontinuous determinants. So the idea that, oh, you only got a couple changes, and, you know, the vaccine creates antibodies to a bunch of different regions and positions, and that's all true, but you can knock out a bunch of them simultaneously if you change the shape of the molecule, and probably not coincidentally, all of these variants that are creating a lot of concern all have three deletions in the spike protein. So that's one thing they all have in common. And then another thing they have in common is a receptor binding domain change. And this is at position 405. And it's got New York's name all over it because the N changes to Y. So it's got a little NY in it. Denoted N501Y, and so it literally has New York's at least initials on it. And that particular change, the N at position 501 changing to a Y at position 501, is present in all of these variants. So the New York, or I'm sorry, soon to be New York. Now it's the UK and the South Africa and the case in Boston all had N501. Why? So that's something they all have in common. And then something else that's in common with the variants out of the UK and South Africa is that they all, or almost all, have a another deletion that's also three amino acids in length, and it's in a different gene, and it's in the NSP 16, and the two variants that's in the news that are in the news both have the same three amino acids deleted in this NSB, if I said three, I meant 16, NSB6. So that is a three amino acid deletion that's missing nine nucleotides, and that's present in almost all of these isolates, you know, the prototype or the, you know, the standard version is missing that. And then there are a couple that are a little bit different that actually aren't missing those three. And you know, I posted some of those at recombinomics.co, and they under the sequences and gave examples of some sequences in Scotland that in fact do not have that deletion, but they're rare. The vast majority of the sequences from the UK do have that. And the same is true for the sequences in South Africa. So they've got the identical deletion, three amino acids in the same gene. And there are a few exceptions. So in addition to the ones in Scotland, sequence from Singapore that was there, then it wasn't there, and now it's there again. It's from a 17-year-old girl in Singapore. And in her case, the two of those three amino acids that are missing in most of the sequences are present in her sequence, but they two of the three are actually mutated. So it's got two mutations out of the three, and so that kind of is indicating that, you know, this particular area of the NSB 16 may be susceptible to be inactivated one way or the other, either by deletion or by mutation, and that might affect the ability of the virus to transmit, not because the spike protein has changed, but because the virus and some of these other gene products have to do with defeating other cytokines, you know, like interferon. Or so there's some reason to suspect that common mutations in some of these other genes, even though they're not the spike gene, may have some impact on the ability of the virus to spread or evade the immune response, or just cause more problems. And when you get the mutations, they actually do cause more problems. So those are some of the similarities in the deletions. And then there's similarities in changes in the receptor binding domain. Yeah, in addition to all of them having the N501Y, the South African variant have two other receptor binding domain changes, K417N and E484K. And these are both in the receptor binding domain, and, you know, 484 is not that far from 501. You know, that's relatively close. And the 484, interestingly, that mutation, the E going to a K, was present in the patient from Boston. initially. And then at the end, just before he died, that actually changed to E484A. So it really changed from going from E to K to going to E to A. And so the fact that that one position was changed twice in that one patient, and one of the changes actually matches what this variant out of South Africa has, is suggesting that that may be an important change. And the fact that it's in the receptor binding domain may indicate that it has something with evading the immune system. And so the other thing these variants have in common is they've got a number of mutations. They've got a number of mutations in the spike gene. You know, if you count each deletion is a separate mutation. They've got the one in the UK has the one that everybody has, the D614 gene. And then they've got the one that all the variants have, which is the N501K. And then they've got three amino acids that are deleted, which takes the number of mutations up to five. And then they've got five more. So they've actually got 10 mutations in the spike gene, which is a lot of mutations. And variant in South Africa has a similar number. I don't know the exact number. It varies a little bit, but it's eight or nine. And the 501 is the same, and the 614 is the same, but they've got a couple of receptor binding domain changes that is not in the UK variant, and they got a few extra changes that is not in the UK. So they're somewhat different in what they have besides these common elements, but even though they have some different amino acids changed in the spike protein, they do still have the three amino acids deleted, and they do have both the 501 Y as well as the D614G. So it's N501Y and D614G. And all of the variants have that, as does the patient from Boston. So, and then the fact that some of these are missing the third deletion in the UK, so they've got the 69 and 70, but they're missing the 145. And the fact that some have the deletion in the NSB6 is an indication that these differences are happening by recombination. It's hard to go back and forth with the deletion. It's easy to basically get a deletion, but it's a lot harder to erase that deletion without recombination. It's very easy to do with recombination because you're just recombining with a sequence that doesn't have the deletion, and you swap that out. So you swap the deletion out to the one that's complete, and you fix all four of those deletions with one fell swoop, and it doesn't require any weird mechanism. Is how you're going to figure out what nine nucleotides to stick into that space. You know, what you figure out is you just recombine with a sequence that already has those nine nucleotides, because that's what the wild type is. So it's a lot easier to basically fix deletions, especially with deletions involving multiple amino acids. It's a lot easier to fix that with simply recombining with a sequence that doesn't have the deletion. So So this mixing and matching of these individual mutations as well as deletions that are of 9 nucleotides in length are indications of recombination. And these individual changes are floating around. There are sequences in the U.S. that have the 501, the N501Y mutation. There's sequences in Australia that have that. There's sequences in the U.K. that have that, where they have that, but they don't have the other changes. They've got that one receptor binding domain. They're in the same Italian lineage, so they've got D614G as well as N501Y, but they don't have the other changes, and they don't have the deletions. And they're examples of these other elements that all kind of came together, and possibly from patients that were immunosuppressed and affected over a long time period, and the virus basically evolved, because most of these infections are mixtures anyway. And so you really have several different sequences at once. You got a dominant sequence, sometimes called a consensus sequence, and the consensus sequence is what gets published. But there are other minor versions of the virus with different changes. And if you've got an immunosuppressed host and these other changes offer an advantage, before you get rid of the virus, it's possible that you get rid of most of the wild type or the more common changes, but these rarer ones offer an advantage, and all of a sudden that's what takes over. The wild type get knocked out by the host, and the variants evade that immune response, and all of a sudden a resistant virus emerges with changes that were there all along, but they were there and at a low frequency, and then there's the selection pressure for it to kind of bubble up, and all of a sudden that's the only thing left standing. And so that's one way that with a virus in a patient for a long time, that can happen multiple times. And you end up with a sequence that has a bunch of changes, and those bunch of changes are involved with evading the immune response. And therefore it both transmits more efficiently, and the host immune response doesn't work as well. If they've seen the virus previously, or if they've been vaccinated with a vaccine that's directed against the original wild type sequence. So those are some of the theoretical reasons why the mutations that are known to be present may be involved with immunological escape, and why just saying, oh, the vaccine should work because it's made up against a bunch of different determinants that are in a bunch of different places in the virus, and therefore you can't get enough variation and escape mutants to overcome the vaccine, is wild speculation at best, in view of which mutations and how many mutations are present. And if there's data to show that, well, then you know, that'll be accurate, that the vaccines against a bunch of different determinants, and even if you knock out a few of them, there's still enough vaccine to recognize the other portions to be effective. And if you can prove that, then you know, you can say that that's what's going on, although that doesn't mean that the variant is getting closer to escaping the vaccine. And on the other hand, if there is a reduction, then that might affect various populations. That might not affect everybody. The younger people may still have a robust enough immune response that they're able to handle these mutations, whereas older patients, even though they've got some immunity, run into problems because they no longer have not all the antibodies that were elicited by the mRNA product, which is the original spike protein. So that the antibodies against the original spike protein, some of them aren't going to react with the with these variants. And if all of the antibodies aren't working well, or at least most of them aren't working well, then patients that have limited ability to mount their own response may get into trouble. So we'll see how well these variants are recognized by the Anasera. Heard estimates of a couple of weeks. There should be that kind of assay ongoing. Continue. They're always screening for mutations that they call them low reactors, where they test them against they test a new isolate against Anasera that are made in animals, and then they use those Anasera to see how well those Anasera are still able to neutralize the new virus. And those that aren't neutralized well are called low reactors, and it's known that the original vaccine no longer works against that. And then when there's enough low reactors, they change the vaccine. And they should have a similar type of a screening right now for these for whatever's out there. And they should be especially targeting these variants that are transmitting more easily, to make sure that even though they can affect more people and probably cause more problems if they go unrecognized, if the vaccine works against them, then that'll be a major plus. But you can kind of predict how well the vaccine's going to work against them by simply testing them against animals that were vaccinated. You know, Anasera that came from animals that were vaccinated with the vaccine strain, which in this case would be the original Wuhan strain. So you would basically see how animals with antibodies to the Wuhan strain would be able to neutralize these new variants. And the concern is that they won't be able to neutralize them that well. So anyway, that gives a better understanding on how these variants have similarities. There's concern about the spread. Like I said, there is a new case in Australia based on the sequence. It just went to GSAID tonight. That particular case was from South Australia. The first two cases in Australia were from Singapore, and media reports are indicating that there are two more cases from Victoria. So based on the sequences in the media reports, it sounds like there's five different individuals who've been infected in Australia, and they're in three different locations. They're all kind of southern, but one's in Sydney, the other is probably in the Melbourne area, and the other one is in the Adelaide area. So those three major cities may have more cases than have been identified thus far, but there are five cases that have been identified. Similarly, in Israel, which isn't in Europe, or at least not in Western Europe, it has four cases, and three that I seem to know about. I'm not sure. They didn't give a whole lot of information against the fourth one. And there's a case in Singapore, which I mentioned, which is a 17-year-old girl. The two cases in Sydney are also young. They're 6 years old and 12 years old, I believe. And then the new case in Adelaide, South Australia. She was 24 years old. So these are younger cases that are being identified. Now, I don't know how sick they are. It could be that these are just who's traveling. But anyway, those are the cases outside of Europe. And then in Europe, there have been sequences released from the Netherlands. There's a couple sequences from the Netherlands. There's a sequence from Gibraltar. There's a lot of sequences all over the UK. There's quite a few sequences. I think there's 8 or 9 sequences from Denmark. And then there are media reports that say there are cases in Iceland. There are cases in Belgium. And the number of cases outside of the UK with not necessarily robust screenings in many countries, including the U.S., suggests that this virus could be quite widespread. South African sequence, 2 cases have been identified in the UK, one's in London, I'm not sure where the other one is. But the 2 that are positive are not the travelers to South Africa, they're contacts of the traveler. So it's not really clear how many other contacts there might be to the original travelers. And the UK is saying that, you know, because they have these 2 additional receptor binding domain changes, that they've evolved even further towards efficient transmission, and the South African variants transmit more easily than the UK variants. You know, a lot of that transmission data is kind of anecdotal, and some modeling is not really clear exactly how much it is, how efficient it is, but the variant is becoming dominant. The majority of the sequences now that have been identified, and almost all of the sequences that are being deposited now are the variant. So the variant has kind of taken over most of the UK now. And it just seems that there would be people flying out of the UK into Europe and into other countries, like the ones that have already been cited, that most of these cases that are outside of Europe have traveled, or their contacts have traveled from the UK. So that would be the cases in Israel and Singapore and Australia. And but a lot of people leave the UK, and especially if the virus has been there for a couple of months now. It's likely that this virus is seeded worldwide. And the only way you can really detect it is to do sequencing. And in Europe, sequencing is pretty robust. And in London, it's very strong. They're sequencing 10% of the cases, and that might actually be higher now. And the U.S. is definitely lagging. If you look at the sequences, not many of them are from the East Coast. There was a sequence out of Florida that got one of those deletions. It was just a positive the end of November, but it was actually collected July 3rd. So that's not real assuring that this only had the one deletion. It didn't have the rest of them. So this doesn't qualify as a variant, but it's got some of the components that end up in the variant. And there's just, the idea that you've got a sample that you collected in July and you don't report it till almost December. It's not good for surveillance if you're looking for newly emerging viruses. I mean, you don't pick up your game. If there's one here, you might not find out till the middle of next year. So that, people will step up their game. The numbers are starting to increase, but a lot of these numbers are increasing in deposits, but they're deposits from samples that were collected many, many months ago before this virus emerged. So they're unlikely to show anything because the virus wasn't really circulating when these other U.S. cases were infected. So the U.S. definitely has a pickup of screening, and there's a very, very, very high probability that when they do that, they'll find that the virus has been here and is spreading, and it's unlikely to be contained. That generally the way this works, by the time you actually realize there's a problem, the our horse is out of the barn, so to speak, and you know, you can run and shut the door, but the horse is still out of the barn. And in this case, the virus is out of the country. Is the virus that spreads very efficiently, and therefore it's likely to continue spreading. And the more it spreads locally, the harder it is to trace. And the only way you're going to identify these right now is by sequencing them, that they are SARS-CoV-2. So I mean, they'll be positive in the PCR test. So you'll know that they've got a virus, but you won't know they have a variant without at least doing a partial sequence on the virus. There's enough mutations that, you know, you have a pretty good idea if you just start sequencing the spike protein, and you'd know pretty soon whether you've got the variant down, because there's 10 different mutations that would tell you a little bit, and if they've got most of those 10, that would tell you a lot, like, you know, this is a variant. So that's it for now. It's going to be an evolving story, literally and figuratively, and we'll have a lot more information in the upcoming days.
Okay, thanks for that information. Listeners, please always go to the Common Sense CFO for all this information. We'll keep you updated as the situation continues to evolve, and thanks for listening.